All right, let's try this shit again. This is Jeremy. This is the very historic edition of Stunt Granny Audio that is actually part two because part one didn't actually work out the way it was supposed to. So there you go.
Yeah, we're praying to God that this actually stays recorded this time around. And luckily we're not slap happy, drunk, and all of a bunch of other things, so hopefully some sober minds will make for a shorter and more concise review of Raw today.
Yeah, and that's basically what we're going to talk about. It's just Raw from last night, since there were actually two people in attendance for it. The show, it was one of those rare commercial-free ones, and their guest host was Buzz Aldrin, and I think he's a decent place to start with the show because he was only on two segments. Wow, and that's really two more than probably needed to be, I guess.
Yeah, he got to whore out his book, and that was really about it. He did the whole Airborne thing, which I suppose is a nice little rub in some ways for Evan. But it was also a nice way to bring out another Canadian during that whole matchup.
Well, also, when he called him that guy, I think Evan something. And he goes, Evan Bourne, that guy. And then, of course, Gail Kim making a return. Apparently her implants didn't make a return, though, which is not, you know, disparaging to her. It's just an observation because she still looked delicious. Is that more all the time we should spend on Buzz Aldrin? Because really, his plastic face, oh, and the plasticness of his wife's face as well, just, wow, it was off the charts.
Yeah, she has more plastic than all of your computer equipment combined.
Yes, but probably cheaper because it wasn't colored. That's a joke that no one's gonna get, but oh well. All right, well, let's go to I don't know what was the big news. Is the big news to be Bret Hart winning? I guess. Was there?
That would be the biggest news, I think, out of the whole ordeal, although I've got to imagine that it's going to be a non-factor as things go along. I can't believe that he's going to drop the title to somebody, really. I think he'll just cough it up and they can have a tournament for it because, well, maybe the U.S. title will look halfway important at that point because The Miz was pretty much shitting on it anyway.
Well, it didn't help that The Miz also was a champion and then got into the tag team championship part two, so they never let him defend it at all. I don't know, it was one of those things though where we were just sitting there trying to figure out how they're going to get out of this, and then we were like, all right, they'll just have, you know, the Hart Dynasty interfere and get disqualified or something. Then they added that stipulation where you can't get disqualified, and there were no countouts as well, so it was like you can't have Bret Hart go out, which is apparently his last appearance with WWE, looking rotten and losing. But then you can't have him beat The Miz cleanly either. So it was just what a weird predicament to put themselves in.
And not only that. What was I wanting to say here? Oh, it was the aftermath that was really strange to me too, with Michael Cole going heel again and completely bagging, getting all bent out of shape about how Bret Hart won the belt. He's like, oh, they interfered. He didn't really do anything. And it's like, The Miz asked for, well, okay, not The Miz, but Chris Jericho asked for the match to be no DQ in the whole nine yards. So you have to blame Jericho and The Miz, by extension, for the loss. I mean, there's no bitching about it. Cole is such a horrendous actor that McMahon should not be feeding him those lines at all, in any way, shape, or form.
I like the deliberate listen of that. But no, that's exactly what it was. For some reason, McMahon had to feel the need to like feed Cole these lines about Bret Hart. I was like, didn't he already have his WrestleMania moment? It's like, well, you know, you're the one that told him, all right, here, you're gonna sign for so many dates, we're gonna contract you, and you know, you booked the show, so it's not like this is exactly something he wanted. Clearly Bret's not a wrestler anymore. Although he looks a lot more coherent behind the mic than he had. I don't know if it was nerves or whatever it was. But you could see in that opening segment with Jericho and Bret Hart, just how much fun the both of them were having. I mean, I thought that was pretty clear just from the way they were conducting themselves and really facial expression. I mean, Jericho, of course, was staying heel, but you could see just in the way they conducted themselves that this was, like, important to at least Jericho. And then Bret Hart basically, I mean, fed lines so he could come right back and, you know, get Chris Jericho over, which, I mean, doesn't really need the rub, I guess, but that's kind of what happened.
Yeah, and we had kind of figured out, or at least we think we figured out, that those two never really met. We think that Jericho had moved over to the WWE just about the time that Bret Hart moved to WCW. So it was kind of a fun moment, and God only knows that WCW was probably never in Canada. So that made the moment extra special, kind of having two Canadian icons in the ring to start with. Although, as an overall show, I think that, ended up hurting a little bit because they almost stacked the beginning of the show way too much with they stacked the beginning of the show way too much with Canadians and kind of wore out the crowd a little bit after that. Especially the matchup that led out after the opening segment there with Bret and Chris Jericho.
Yeah, that was pretty cool, actually. Edge came out and really didn't get a huge pop that you would expect, I mean, especially being a Canadian. But then Christian comes out, and that was really cool. It was like, oh, we're finally going to get to see this match. And being a commercial-free edition, we got to see a match, too. And that was the stark contrast between a regular Raw and the commercial-free one. Yeah, they're still commercial-free. Or, I'm sorry, they're still commercials. But the wrestlers didn't have to pace themselves around commercial breaks. They didn't have to toss a guy out, like, 2 minutes into a match because they're going to the next Subway ad. They just kept to keep going and going. It really showed.
Yeah, and it was kind of strange. There was one moment where I think Christian or Edge got thrown up against the barricade, and I literally thought to myself, oh, yeah, here's the commercial break. We're going for it. It's like, oh, yeah, there are no commercial breaks today. So it did make a bit of a difference, even if they did throw in Prince of Persia and WWE.com or WWEshop.com ads left and right.
Yeah, and that I think the part you're talking about was the count out. It was like Christian missed some move, ran into the barrier, and then he was like getting a nine, and all of a sudden Christian jumped back in the ring, almost like, you know, coming back from break. He could get away with that stuff because no one would see it on TV. Because it was just awkward. He's out, and all of a sudden at nine he stands up and jumps in the ring like nothing was wrong. But beyond that, no, I mean, it was good, and Edge did not make Christian look weak at all, which maybe that goes back to them being friends, but I don't know. I was expecting, you know, Edge to come out, have like a 5-minute match, but it went, what, 10, 15, 10, 12, something like that, with a good finish. I mean, and a clean finish that didn't make Christian look weak, which I thought was important.
Yeah, no, that was as good a match as I've seen on TV this year, honestly. And, yeah, you're right. He didn't make Christian look like a yutz. Unfortunately for Christian, he still has lost way too many matches in a row at this point and needs kind of a win to buoy his chances over on SmackDown.
Oh, yeah. It was, yeah, what is that? He lost to Kofi. Well, he won 2 weeks ago when he beat Cody Rhodes, but right now with no one establishing Cody Rhodes, that wasn't a big deal. But, yeah, Christian wasn't – I mean, this was just the appeal to have these two finally fight with a little bit of backstory, how they said, you know, Christian called him out on SmackDown. And it's, I guess, as long as your history is only a couple weeks old, they'll remember. So, but it was good. The right finish. And then I did like the whole Randy Orton thing where he goes, I don't know why Christian's out there because that's not who I chose. So then it gets everyone doing the speculation for that brief moment until the gong sounds. And I don't know. It's kind of a mark-out moment because that was really cool. It was not expected. And The Undertaker, even up there in age, when – and I told Kevin this, McMahon's greatest creation is not Hulk Hogan. It's The Undertaker. When that gong goes off, you know something special is coming up now. I mean, it's – like maybe it's an unexpected factor, but it was really cool. I'm stumbling.
Yeah, no, it was a fantastic surprise. Like, that was not something that I or someone I would have expected. They did kind of overall have a nice little use of the SmackDown players to kind of give them a bump in a way. Because they almost need that with the way SmackDown got shafted in the draft. I would hope that you'd be highlighting some of the guys that will be kind of elevated on SmackDown with their Raw appearances last night. Not that The Undertaker needs it. I mean, come on.
Well, that was the Undertaker's vacation time they just interrupted. So I thought that was a good use of him, though. You didn't give anything away. I mean, not that we haven't seen Edge versus Undertaker who knows how many times now in what different formats, but it was still a cool idea because it gave the crowd kind of sense there was something special anyways, just the way they started the show. So then why not just make it all the way special and have him there? Yeah,
and it gives Christian a little bit of revenge since he got to toss Edge back into the ring after his loss. So it's kind of like, okay, you might have won, but I still got your ass handed to you.
And I did like Edge's facial expression when he jumps out and he's like, yeah, count. I don't care. And he's like, he looks at The Undertaker like, yep, that's it. See ya. And, yeah, but Christian did get some heat back, and the fans got to see a pretty nice choke slam on that as well. And that was almost the end of – that was the end of Edge's night because he didn't really say anything when it came to Randy Orton and Jack Swagger. He just kind of showed up. Swagger just kind of came out after Randy Orton was out there. And they got things a-rolling. So, I don't know. It just seemed weird that they didn't give him any other speaking part. Let's see. Undertaker Edge. Yeah, all right. For the clarification why we'll go quiet or if it sounds like we're in two different rooms, it's because we have to share the same microphone and neither of us want to get within, like, 5 inches of each other's faces to talk. So, yeah, it's an awkward little thing. Oh, all right. So we'll get to Randy Orton and Jack Swagger in a minute. One of the big surprises of the night, and again goes back to how WWE's audience has changed over, Ted DiBiase ended his search for a new Virgil by bringing out the original Virgil. Only about 5,000 of the 15,000 in attendance actually knew who this guy was. They didn't even dress him up in the old Virgil gear. He just kind of stumbled out like, I need a check. I'm going to do this for a while. I need a check. I need a check.
And I was surprised at how good a shape Virgil was actually in, to be honest. We have speculated on his age, and neither of us were industrious enough to go and actually check it. But, yeah, I mean, it's a decent way to have it. Somebody had suggested using Michael Tarver as the new Virgil. But I don't know. I guess you've at least got to wait until the end of NXT to use any of those guys, honestly.
Yeah. Michael Tarver would actually bring something totally different as Virgil. It wouldn't be the silent black guy that stands outside and just, like, you know, nefariously backhand cheats. It could be, you know, he's actually Ted DiBiase's muscle when he doesn't want to get involved in something. So there's a little something different there. It's at least something to do to try and get Tarver a little more time because, you know, he kind of needs it. But the match featured Yoshitatsu, a guy who should be on SmackDown because him, along with Evan Bourne, Zack Ryder, all these guys are just getting lost in the Raw shuffle, and they come out as jobbers now, and that was just really, really a disappointment. It kind of shows the need for an ECW still. If you're going to have these guys, you got to utilize them correctly, and – I don't know. Maybe because he's Japanese, Tatsu doesn't get, you know, the break or the credit that he's supposed to. I don't know.
Yeah, I had almost forgotten that he was on Raw at this juncture because of how far down he's buried. So, and he used to, and that was the sad thing, is that he used to get a really good crowd reaction. Even when he first came over to Raw, he was getting a pretty solid reaction. And now everyone's like, oh, yeah, he's still around?
Yeah, and that's really sucks too, because Kevin's exactly right. He got a decent crowd pop. Really, it was when he was feuding with William Regal. It was really when it started. William Regal, people may not care about him enough to boo him or cheer him, but he certainly gets people to cheer against him, like cheer for whoever he's wrestling. And I mean, that's kind of a weird thing because you'd figure it would just be, you know, he'd garner those boos instead of the other guy just getting cheers. And it sort of carries over. It was really a nothing match, though. And Virgil didn't do anything except, as I put it, looked very, very sad. He didn't look – I mean, he was never a badass because he wore glitter vests, but he just looked really depressed. I mean, and going back to the whole I need a check thing, I don't know. I thought at the end when DiBiase was treating him bad, he would have, like, turned on him already. Just one of those little one-off things where it's like, all right, let's throw something at the wall and get people talking. I don't want to see this continue. I don't want to see that Virgil – or, well – I don't know. That's not what I meant. It's like I don't want to see that guy out there anymore. I mean, if you want a new Virgil, fine. Don't bring that guy out there.
Yeah, we don't need a secondary TNA where everything that's old is supposed to be new again. So, even if they don't end up using Michael Tarver and they decide to bring in somebody else as the new Virgil, I would be perfectly okay with it.
Yeah, the new Virgil thing has its time, but I'm not gonna say what I was gonna say.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you're right. It would be kind of nice if they had someone that was a bit of muscle again, you know, rather than just somebody that kind of sat there and did a whole lot of nothing.
Yeah, and the other thing, at this point in time, DiBiase doesn't need it. No one's gonna do any talking for him, so. It takes away from it. They've already saddled him with $1 million belt. I mean, I know that they're trying to make him sound like he's rich now because of his trust fund came through. I don't even know if that's how those work. It's like they're trying too hard, too fast with him. Just let him go as it is and see what happens. I mean, he had a decent amount of heel heat anyways, enough to, like, start him off somewhere, not get to the top right away. So adding all this just seems kind of desperate to me.
Yeah, I don't know if it's desperate or not, but it's somewhere to start. They're starting to give him some character, which is nice because even though he got a little bit of camera time with Orton, they still didn't really define him or Cody Rhodes really at all. So it kind of sucks to give him the belt, and they really could have built him up without it, but it's somewhere to start.
Yeah, and then they moved on. They had Miz's entrance. They showed him talking backstage with Jericho, and Miz comes out and he talks the whole way through, which I thought was kind of cool. It was different for him. I mean, he don't want to keep doing the same thing all the time, so that's fine. Came out, you know, bad-mouthing Bret Hart, and then Bret Hart gets to come out doing his entrance with a typical Calgary Hitman jersey on, which was a fun one to try and explain to a 15-year-old who never watches wrestling, as well as all the different rules. I don't know if you got this feeling last night when Bishop was asking us about all the rules and stuff. Did it feel like it was impossible to explain? I mean, I was like, I was trying to give the bare bones explanation for everything, only because you see all the stuff going on, and then you try and explain the rules to somebody, and it's like, well, that's not what he's doing. Like, well, yeah, I guess it's.
Yeah, it's still always weird that punches are not allowed, even though they are used extensively in every single match. Like, there is no reason for that to be illegal. Like, we were talking, too, about how the refs were really involved, especially Slick Johnson at Sacrifice. And Earl Hebner. But there on Raw, they do the best job that they can. Like, we talked about how Jack Doan was pretty much out of the picture any time that he possibly could be. So, like, having a ref come in and say that a punch is illegal is really just a waste of time. And I still don't get the whole referee telling you to get off the top ropes, even though it's completely and utterly legal to go to the top ropes.
Yeah, that was one of the things we really got on with our Sacrifice review that was really unfortunately lost, in case we didn't mention that already. The TNA referees are atrocious for being in the shot, being in the middle of the action when the referee's job is essentially to keep the match going. Here's your commercial break. Go home. Here's how much time we got left. That sort of thing. You know, not in TNA, where Earl Hebner pushes down people, always gets in their face, makes them seem like they're the badasses. No, you're not. You're not wrestlers. You shouldn't be showing fear, but you shouldn't be like moxie, like showing moxie and standing up to the guys, because they are physically intimidating. They are bigger than you. They are athletes. You're just, unfortunately, a lowly referee. That's all you are. I don't know. It'd be like baseball. Just, I mean, really, sometimes baseball umpires do it too. I don't know, like hockey referees get in the middle of fights and like start challenging the two guys who are fighting. Like, no, that shit doesn't happen. And it's distracting. So, I hope that was your stomach, by the way.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how we exactly got to the whole referees explaining the rules. That's what it was, of wrestling. Yeah, it was a little strange to try and explain some of these rules that have no explanation really whatsoever. And it really would just – it would benefit both leagues, all three leagues, all however many leagues are out there, to just kind of update things. I mean, it's – everyone's seen some form of UFC at this point. I think we can pretty much say that punching is okay and to be – you know, just go on with it and not make it illegal anymore. It would force you to do something a little bit more than to complain about it, too. Especially when someone like The Undertaker is the best pure striker the WWE's ever had. Like, he is now known for punching, and yet it's illegal.
Yeah, that move, that has never made sense to me. And then, of course, it was a Mitchell Cool thing that started anyways, so... Let's just take it. Let's just leave it at that. I mean, come on. So, but getting to this actual match, it was the train wreck that was McMahon Hart at WrestleMania. They pulled out all the stops way too quick. They got Kozlov and William Regal, which garnered the 15-year-old response. Who's the guy in the black shirt? Oh, he's William Regal. He looks terrible. Yeah, and it's hard to defend. It's like, well, he's a legitimate badass, supposedly. That doesn't really help on TV, though. So they got the Hart Dynasty part out of the way, and then Jericho, of course, interferes, beats on Hart, then the Hart Dynasty comes back. Natalya gets involved for a little bit, and we kept wondering if this is where Bryan Danielson was going to show up. Actually, going back to what Eric said on not the last audio, but the audio with the two of us did, where, you know, Bryan Danielson said he was going to go back to being the best, so maybe this would have been a nice segue into it, but I guess it can't happen that fast, or the whole NXT competition is, you know, as dire as it is, basically is proved moot if the guy can come right back after losing. So, but no, I just thought the match was a train wreck. And they put themselves in a corner, too, by making it no DQ, no count out, all that sort of stuff, unnecessarily.
Well, the one thing that did save them that was a big difference to me between this one and the WrestleMania one was just the sheer amount of time that they spent on it. This one being all of maybe 5 minutes at most really helped out as opposed to being 15 or whatever the hell that match at WrestleMania was, because that was way too god-awful long. If this really would have gone any longer than it did, it would have been rough to swallow. But it didn't, so I'm cool with it.
Yeah, it didn't overstay its welcome, but again, it just shows clearly Bret Hart should never be wrestling. And I hope this is his last appearance. I'm really hoping that Monday it comes down to so the new GM, whoever that's going to be, addressing the crowd saying, all right, look, there's – Bret Hart clearly isn't – I guess you can't say clearly because it kind of puts a – you know, kind of puts him down a little, but – the new GM comes out and says, look, Bret Hart's not an active wrestler. The U.S. Championship needs to be defended by someone who can defend it every month. So Bret Hart has graciously vacated the belt to keep up the prestige of the United States Championship. I guess that's a way around it, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, something along that lines has got to be what they're going to do. But I suppose we'll wait until next week to get that one going.
Yeah. One thing I'll get that in a second, I suppose. Then they had a women's match. Layla, blah, 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 them. Layla Michelle McCool, who are from SmackDown, and Maryse, who's from Hotland, taking on Eve and the Bella Twins. Folks, this is what the women's division has fallen to since they've released everybody and injuries have taken everybody out. Kelly Kelly, I don't consider a wrestler. Sorry. They don't like using Jillian Hall other than comedy sketches. And that's it. I mean, I know I'm missing somebody, but again, that doesn't really matter. And this match was exactly what it was, filler. That this was where a commercial break would have been.
Yeah, no, we continue to pound on the women's division just because they don't care. And I was surprised, honestly, that it got 4 minutes. I think this was where a commercial break would have made this match even shorter than the 4 minutes that it was. I think Eve's improving, but she's still not that great. They still don't concentrate on Maryse nearly enough to make this feud anything worthwhile, and dumping baby powder on her really just doesn't help further the feud to me in any way. Like, I don't understand why, you know, it kind of goes back to this a lot with the women's division, why they can't actually write storylines for them other than I'm hotter than you. Like, seriously, like, women don't have problems other than the fact that they're not as hot as the other woman. Like, trust me, I've seen a lot of bitches with catfights, even in high school, fight over pettier stuff than each other's hotness. So there's no reason you can't write a storyline for them. Give me a fucking break.
Well, when you have nothing but nerds writing for them and people who clearly don't understand women, I'm sure Stephanie McMahon will try and say she does, but that's where we'll leave that. There was also another point I was going to bring up, but I forgot it, so I guess I'm not going to bring it up now. But now there's nothing left to the women's division, and I honestly don't know why there's two titles, let alone one anymore. There are two titles for the women's belt, apparently. Both Michelle McCool and Layla have one. And this isn't Raw talk, this is SmackDown talk for a second, but when Layla won the belt, Michelle McCool should not have been happy. It doesn't matter if you're best friends, she's clearly the dominant one of those two. She's the brains, brawn, whatever. And Layla always seemed like the hanger-on. So it would have been as if Stevie Richards won the ECW belt in a three-way. Well, I think this did happen, actually. Instead of Raven. Raven would have beat the shit out of him. And like basically put him back in his place. I don't understand why Michelle McCool's not doing that.
Yeah, and the fact that neither Cole nor Lawler had any explanation for why both of them had a belt coming to the ring is unacceptable at best. They should have been openly questioning it more. I think they did question it a little bit, but they really should have been maybe asking their backstage contacts to get an explanation. Hell, ask Josh Matthews, you know, even over the air. You know, that's what he's back there for. Isn't he back there for investigative reporting? This stuff isn't that hard to try and cover. Like, even if you don't go back to it, ask him to go figure out why they have it that way. Fuck, cut in during the match. I don't care. Have a little Josh Matthews head pop up in the corner. It's not like the match matters itself. At least get an explanation for it. But I guess that's coming on, tonight, technically, Friday, on air.
Yeah, and then they kind of moved away from this match, I mean, pretty much like every other Divas match. Okay, it happened by. And they went right to Jack Swagger coming out as Randy Orton's opponent, which makes sense, even if it's a SmackDown crossover. They have a history. Swagger just beat Orton at, was it Extreme Rules? Whatever the last pay-per-view was. So, you know, it makes Orton look vulnerable, and there's no problem with that. The only problem, I guess, would be it's a SmackDown wrestler, but the brand crossover doesn't mean shit anymore. Doesn't matter.
Well, it normally does. They even were pretty limited this year to me before the WrestleMania buildup because there are so few feuds that were inter-brand. So it was kind of weird that not long after the draft they did something this blatant to have this many SmackDown people on there. Just as an overall whole, Christian, Swagger, Lay Cool, And who was the other person already? Oh, did I say Christian? Ah, fuck, there was one other person. But, oh, Undertaker. Duh. But, as Jeremy already pointed out, there are a litany of reasons to have Jack Swagger on there. And they were allowed to submit any name. Although Cole and Lawler maybe could have cleared it up a little bit and said that it was anybody in the WWE rather than just anybody in the brand. Although maybe that would have... Well, yeah, he was in a commercial with the Great Khali, but... yeah, fuck Hornswoggle.
Well, yeah, of course. All right, so that led to another match, and we were kind of like, well, what are they doing here? Because neither of us were smart enough to figure out that, oh, Edge was going to interfere. But really, I figured we saw the end of Edge with the chokeslam earlier in the night, so it didn't even occur to me he'd be popping back out again.
And I guess you kind of mentioned it a little bit earlier here. I guess this his interference gives him an out as for why they didn't give him a little bit of extra mic time since he got more physical time in the ring, even if he wasn't wrestling a match or anything. Like, he was there really more than Randy Orton was.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It was – I guess I would have liked to have heard Edge talk a little more about it, but there are so little SmackDown matches on the pay-per-view. Who's to say they're not just going to do the same thing Friday now and have guys come over? It wouldn't make it much sense, but then again, I mean, they had a bunch of SmackDown wrestlers on Raw with no explanation too. So it's the classic, all right, Edge won, so clearly Orton wins at the pay-per-view style thing. It didn't make Swagger look any weaker. Which is good, because as every time you see the guy, he's grown a little bit more every time. Outside of that really long segment on SmackDown, which was unnecessarily long, Swagger hasn't done anything to make people not take him seriously. He's looked solid in his matches. Maybe the stuff with the Big Show is a little weird, but then again, it's kind of a credit to how big the Big Show is. Ugh. That was terrible. That, you know, you've got that established guy, and you know, you want Swagger looking a little weaker. But this, I guess, is actually about Orton Edge. But oh well. I mean, it is what it is. The crowd likes Orton now. He hasn't really changed his act. I mean, a little bit, I suppose, just subtle tweaks. But it makes you look forward to the match at least.
Yeah, and the strangest thing really that happened with Orton last night was the fact that he was not wearing his wrist tape, which I honestly couldn't stop staring at his wrists the whole night just because of that. He usually has, you know, maybe about a foot's worth of black tape on each wrist, and it was just bizarre. It made sense when Batista didn't have it on earlier in the evening, because I think we kind of glazed over his beatdown of Mark Henry, but he didn't have his normal tape and elbow pads on because, well, he wasn't in a match. But Orton was actually in a match, so I thought something more was going to make this match even shorter than it was.
Yeah. Sorry, I started thinking, reading, and I skipped ahead to the Buzz Aldrin segment that was next, where He was trying to make the Canadian fans feel something about the United States space program by telling them that Canada built landing gear and steps or something for the moon landing. That shit was great. And it just proves how awful Buzz Aldrin is now. And I know he's an American icon hero, some people will say. But it's, you know, when it's time. The loony bin calls. And at least They got the show, Buzz Aldrin knocking out or punching that dumbass reporter guy in the mouth over and over again. That was so damn funny. And one of those things that you clearly can never get tired of watching.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. I'm glad that Zack Ryder finally has his new hottie in Alicia Fox, since... Again, this goes back to the whole they don't give a shit about the women's division. She's a fairly good wrestler, but they pretty much crapped on her when she got her chance at Mickey James or whoever it was for the title. And she hasn't been used since then. So this is a good enough use for her since Rosa is over on SmackDown now getting crapped on for just... I don't know why exactly. They just decided to move her and get her away from a good gimmick.
Oh, and also, getting away from a good gimmick or getting to a gimmick, I suppose this is what Balls Aldrin actually said when it came to Evan Bourne about the guy who blasts off Monday nights. All I heard was that guy, blah, blah, Evan Bourne, figuring that he wasn't supposed to be saying that. And he just fucked up and said it. So, I don't know. Then we already covered the match. It was just like, whatever. This would have been a commercial break, too. But I did say that Evan Bourne, Zack Ryder is a good feud. It gives them something to do, and it gives them a chance to establish characters. Because they could kind of goof on Evan Bourne for being kind of a nerdy kind of guy. I'm not saying he is, but that's what Zack Ryder could do. At least give it something, but then they'd have to concentrate on other people besides the big six for more than 10 minutes, and that ain't going to happen.
Yeah, no, you're perfectly right. This could be a decent, you know, low feud. Bourne, as you pointed out last night, is still fairly young, so there's no reason to rush him to the top. So, I mean, just kind of keep on building up his audience and give him some time in the ring. And he didn't get to finish off Evan Bourne. It was Zack Ryder. It was Gail Kim pinning Alicia Fox. So, you know, they can still get at least another match or two out of this before they move on to something else.
Yeah. Not saying they even need to really move on to something else fast, because what else are they going to do? So that's why I said it's a decent thing for them to be in. So I wouldn't mind seeing it continue. Flush it out a tad bit, but it'll never get the center stage treatment. So this led to the main event, which also goes back to Batista coming out and beating Mark Henry with a board, because Batista obviously was going to interfere. I think if they wouldn't have turned Mark Henry into kind of like a happy-go-lucky clownish sort of face, that this beatdown would have been a lot better. If Mark Henry had continued the little run that he had when he first came to Raw and attacked Randy Orton and beat him, the people were into his big badass character. I mean, he just came out, was like, hey, and then destroyed him. And then after that, it's been nothing. If they could have capitalized on that, then had Batista come out and absolutely destroy him 2 weeks in a row, it would have served a much bigger purpose and much bigger, I can't think of the right word. It would have gotten over Batista even bigger as a heel. And even stronger going into the Over the Limit pay-per-view.
Yeah, you're right again there. It would have made because his beatdowns just didn't mean nearly as much as it should have. Because Mark Henry really hasn't done anything in the last couple of months. Like, even when him and MVP got together at first, he was kind of the muscle of their tag team. Even though MVP doesn't really need any additional muscle. So, yeah, he's just kind of looked like a clown. And the fact that Batista walked away after beating him down and called him the Kool-Aid Man was outstanding.
Batista is not only the most vicious heel, he's also the coolest heel in wrestling right now. That line about Kool-Aid's been coming for months, and nobody's capitalized on it till then. And then, yelling, give me my spotlight after that. And then just saying, all right, Kool-Aid, or see you later, Kool-Aid, something like that. That was just tremendous. And I can't believe no one's capitalized on that. And then you think, well, no one cares about Mark Henry anymore. So, oh well. But then you got John Cena and Sheamus. Everyone knew what was going to happen at the end of this one. What I was not expecting was John Cena to throw Sheamus over the top rope with no regard for Sheamus' safety. At the end, in case you missed it, he was teasing the attitude adjustment over and over. Like, he was going to give it to Sheamus and throw him out of the ring to give it to him. Well, Batista comes in the ring, and Cena literally just throws Sheamus over the top rope. It wasn't – and we watched it a couple times trying to figure out if Sheamus was supposed to hold onto the rope to help break his fall. There was no way he could. He got tossed. I mean, it was basically like throwing a pillow over the top rope. It was like, well, it lands, it lands. And I thought that was really unprofessional and dangerous of Cena to do. And I blame Cena totally for it.
Yeah, after giving it a second look, there really isn't anybody to blame except for him. Like, I don't – that is just not a very safe way. Like, even if he would have done that properly, that is not the best way to land down there on the floor. I don't know if he was supposed to maybe flip him a little bit more so that he landed closer to his feet and kind of rolled through, but that just is not a very safe way for them to go to the outside of the ring, no matter what way you hack it.
Yeah, and there was no chance for Sheamus to protect himself on that, because even if he tries to put his arms down, or even his legs, I mean, he'd potentially hurt something on that. So, and I know nothing will come of it. No one's even going to mention it, probably besides the two of us. But that was just a dangerous, sloppy rookie move on Cena's part, and really unnecessary. So, but overall, I thought the show was actually pretty good. For they kept it moving fairly well. I think you mentioned the timing of everything kind of messed up. Like, with no commercials, it messed up, like, what time it actually was. Because it flowed like a pay-per-view, so you're like, oh, keep going and going and going, and all of a sudden it was 10:15, so.
Yeah, that was the biggest one, is that I finally looked at my phone. I was like, holy shit. And Jeremy's like, what? What time is it? I was like, it's a quarter after, and even he was quite surprised at the time that had been buzzed through. No pun intended for that one.
Yeah, so we'll be back tomorrow with our NXT roundup show. So that show should be about 430 minutes because it's only an hour show. And it'll probably cover some of the news tomorrow. So especially with the potentially TNA cuts potentially coming up. Unless something big happens, we cover it tonight. We'll see. We got one more drinking night ahead of us before Kevin has to travel in his what kind of car did they give you?
Cobalt.
A Chevy Cobalt, which is actually kind of a sharp car. I was surprised. So we're going to take off. I don't think there's going to be any sippy time beer right now because it's pretty early still.
That's for later.
Yeah, so we'll get you guys tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Bye.